Good evening, you. That's right, you.
Do
whoever you're sitting with.
You too.
Are listening to The Talking Show on K Chung Radio, Chinatown's only.
Only.
That's right. Only micro-broadcasting radio station. My name is Nicholas Miller, and I'm here, as always, with the inimitable, the unflappable.
Not flapped.
Steve Cato.
I have no flaps. That was a little sportscastery of you there, Nicholas. Are you feeling like the spring, you know, are you feeling like full of sports feeling right now? Some kind of sport?
Right. Yeah, sorry about that one, Steve. I spend a lot of time, about half my time, in Orange County. And down here in Orange County, sports are a big deal. I guess they're okay. A big deal up in L.A. County, too. I don't notice.
Right.
Well, that's not true. My partner, Ella, and I, we definitely notice when there's a Dodgers game.
Uh-huh.
Because we live on Sunset Boulevard.
Right.
Just a nose hair outside of the Echo Park.
Right.
And when there's a Dodgers game, it is punishing to get home.
Uh-huh.
And even parking in our neighborhood is all fucked up.
All fucked up.
It's infuriating. I didn't like baseball much before, and I definitely hate it now.
Right.
It's a boring sport.
It takes too long. Yeah, it takes so long.
And it makes the most exquisite traffic that I know of. You know, like Dodgers and road construction. Those two things, you know, they're just mechanisms for generating traffic in my life.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, sure. My introduction tonight was a little sports-like. It was a sporting introduction, and that's because of all the sports I watch down here in Orange County.
Right, right. I see what you're saying.
And right now, we are in the throes of the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs, and Anaheim, Orange County's own Anaheim Ducks, are ripping through the Calgary Flames.
Oh, dear.
Just ripping through it. Did you happen to catch the game last night? Sorry, two nights ago, Steve?
No, I haven't been following the Stanley Cup, Nicholas, at all, no.
Okay, well, for those of you that didn't catch it, like Steve, Calgary was up 4-1 into the second period. It's not looking good for the Ducks, but they answer, and they answered with vigor, scoring 5 goals, the last one in overtime, only a minute into overtime. It was rip-roaring fun,
oh.
You know.
Rip-roaring.
Yeah. It put real shame to the rampant theory that sports today are rigged by the forces of capital.
Well, FIFA, you know, it's different.
Yeah.
Yeah, come on.
Right. Well, I mean,
Sepp Blatter.
It couldn't have been because
Right. Hockey's
like a large, large version of pinball.
Oh,
it's just a bunch of really like, you know, overgrown men and lots of pads on a slippery surface, just whacking things around, and
uh-huh.
All the goals were like, you know, like. Quantum mechanical. It was like some guy would lob the puck into like a mess of swinging sticks in front of the goal, and the goalie, bless his heart, was just like, you know, like flopping around like a beached seal, and then the puck like bounces off the wrong team and goes into the goal. There's no there's no way the forces of capital determined the outcome of that.
Huh.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess it's a hard argument to make in the midst of the Mighty Ducks, who are a hockey franchise named after, originally named after a franchise narrative from the Hollywood movies, the Mighty Ducks. But apparently, from what I learned the other night, a few years ago, they took on a new owner, and this owner decided that he wanted to make a clean break from this movie narrative, this movie franchise, and renamed and rebranded the team the Anaheim Ducks instead of the Anaheim Mighty Ducks.
Creativity knows no bounds.
Good luck with that one, bud. I still think of the, you know, 1, 2, 3 triple deke from the Mighty Ducks whenever I see those jerseys around town. But yeah, why not? Why not resist resist capital at the level of branding? I mean, who's to say it won't work? Right, Steve?
Yeah. You know, I think I feel about hockey kind of the way you feel about the Dodgers, in the sense that, you know, growing up as I did inside Canada, there'd be this thing that would happen and it would just clog everything up. And you'd be like, there's no place for me to mentally park. There's just a bunch of yahoos everywhere, you know, and you'd want like some to do anything. You'd want to use the space around you. You'd want to use both mental and physical, and you would be prevented from this because there was hockey, like on Earth, you know, somewhere on the planet there was hockey. And as a result, anything you want, all the things, everything of interest to you, was more difficult to obtain because you had to get through hockey to get to it. So I hate hockey. I mean, it's an exciting sport, but I can't, you know?
Yeah. Well, fair point.
Thanks.
Fair point, Steve Cato. Anyhow, tonight we have a film director.
Oh, wow.
From France on the show tonight. And also an old favorite of the talking show. Someone who every once in a while we invite in to kind of grease the wheels of talking. Sometimes we have some rather laconic guests, and we need someone out here in LA to help them, to ease them into this abstract project of ours of analyzing and the patterns and methods of human speech. So, of course, we have one of our favorite interviewers, Charlie Rose, here to help us into the world, the cinematic world of Louis Malle.
Across the channel from Sir Richard Attenborough, director Louis Malle has established himself as not only a giant of French cinema, but a European filmmaker of world renown. He quite simply makes classic movies. The Last Metro still grips us with taut drama. Au revoir, l'enfance is Malle's haunting childhood memory of German-occupied France. Atlantic City and My Dinner with Andre will be screened as long as there are projectionists. Louis Malle's next movie is called Damage. It comes from Josephine Hart's best-selling novel, and we're pleased to welcome him here this evening. Thank you for coming. You optioned Damage when he was still in galleys.
Well, she sent it to me. Josephine Hart. She asked her agent to give it to me, and so it was about 4 months before it was published. I think there was already a lot of interest in the
What struck
studios.
You about it? What was it about this story of an obsessed love that turns a man from a life of conservatism and order and solid reputation into an obsession with an affair?
A study of
classic story, isn't it?
Study of chaos. So it's like a Greek tragedy. I thought it was incredibly difficult to do, which is always something that interests me. I'd not dealt with anything like that for some time. A very disturbing and even shocking tale of, you know, what love can do to us.
Right, let me just talk about this. I'll lay it out. You lay it out for me. Stephen, played by Jeremy Irons, is a 40-ish member of Parliament, a conservative member of Parliament, and he meets a woman. Pick up the story as to what happened to him, and then, because I'm interested in how you communicate what you wanted to communicate about this obsession.
Well, you know, I'm not sure I want to answer you because I think it's the advantage of being a filmmaker that you don't have to explain yourself in words. Actually, this is a script, for instance, written by David Hare, has very little dialogue. It's things happen and
especially with her eyes
in a sort of mysterious way, and you know it's the sort of the classic love at first sight. They meet in a boring reception at the French embassy, and she comes to him to say that she says, "I ought to introduce myself. I'm a friend of your son." And then they start looking at each other a little more than they should. And I was trying to make the point that both their lives was just about to change, you know. And then it goes on. I mean, it's not in one scene. Then they meet again, and then she calls him, and
he says,
"Give me your address.
I'll be there in an hour.
I'll be there in an hour."
And he does, and that starts his torrid relationship.
It's a torrid relationship, but at the same time, because he's essentially a good man, he's also, of course, tortured because he's, you know, destroying his family.
It's his son's...
His son, his wife.
Fiancé, that he's
having
this affair with.
Also, you know, he's used to live a very sort of clean and respectable life.
Okay, but here's my point. I know you don't want to talk about this, but let me try one more time. Well, what you've got to do is show why these two people, she, are entering to this, crossing this divide and entering into this place where they are, I mean, they really are saying goodbye to a lot of things and creating a lot of dangers for themselves. And he's giving up order and reputation and everything else. It's his brother's thing. I mean, you have got to show why they are so obsessed with each other in order to make it work, right?
Well, it's rather difficult because, you know, it's happened to a number of friends of mine.
Fell in love with the first glance and somebody and didn't risk their career and everything because of this.
Yeah, I've seen that happen. People sort of drop out but it's not, it's very difficult to explain rationally by definition. It's something that you would explain after it happened, but not on the moment. And I try to show that, of course, it was like a magnetic attraction and a sexual attraction, but also that there might be an element of self-destruction in this relationship.
It clearly is
on both sides, it's bound to end tragically, and they both know it, and it's a lot about pleasure, but there's a certain amount of, violence and despair in it.
You think a Frenchman is better? This is an English story, but somehow because it's love and passion, a French director is better able to do this?
Well, I'm not sure about that, but I can tell you that I work with this wonderful English writer, David Hare. And
yeah. Who wrote Miss Saigon, did he?
No, he wrote plenty. He wrote a number of great plays, and he's also a director. And when we got to those scenes, we discussed them, but he refused to write them. He said, "Well, you know, I'm English. This is not my terrain. This is all for you, Louis. Good
and
luck.
You wrote them?
Good luck." I didn't write them. We improvised them with the actors.
All right, set this scene up. This is Jeremy Irons playing Stephen with the young woman, and I think it ends with she's saying she's a damaged person. Set up the scene for me.
Well, it's a scene after... it's rather at the beginning, but it's when he's really hooked. And there's been before that a scene, a family dinner, which was a little difficult for him.
All right.
And then
because his son, who was the fiancé, is there
and
all that.
Yeah, his son was a wonderful young man. And so he follows her home and he comes to see her. And they have this sort of grab each other and they have a rather warm, love scene. And then after that, they're on the bed and they talk. And she talks about her brother, and we'll know later that the brother has been a real trauma of her childhood because he was desperately in love with her and committed suicide.
So she's a damaged person and a survivor.
And she's very honest because she warns him that she's trouble.
Yeah. Roll tape. Here it is.
You see, if you can imagine, the worst thing that could happen ever in the whole of your life, well, that happened to me. My brother killed himself over me. I had to decide. I made up my mind. Because I could have gone under. But I wasn't going to. Remember, damaged people are dangerous. They know they can survive.
Yeah, that's nice. May I turn to, is it a true story that when you met your wife, there was a five-hour lunch at the Russian Tea Room?
It is true, yes.
Yeah.
A very long lunch.
And was it?
The customers for dinner were coming in, and she suddenly remembered she had to go to the ballet with friends, and so we... that was pretty much that. I think at the end of this afternoon, we knew pretty much it was not as violent and desperate as damages, but we knew that something had happened, and it was forever.
Alice Arlen, a friend, I think, has said that between the two of you, it's like she would be the only possible person for you and you the only possible person for her. There was this sense of, to know the both of you that...
Well, I don't know, it's terribly nice to say that because Candace is somebody extraordinary, so I'm very flattered, but I think so because I'd been married once and I was decided never to marry again, and Candy had been, this was a really sudden, and it's really interesting because we sort of knew each other without knowing each other.
I know the feeling. Yeah.
And we would meet in social, dinners or whatever, and sort of almost avoid each other. I think, and we've often talked about it, I think what happens is, we knew that we shouldn't fool around. Maybe the moment was not come, but we had to. I think we knew. I think we knew, and for quite a few years. And then one day, I called her and invited her to lunch, and this long lunch.
And you really knew then, best lunch you've ever had.
Best lunch.
And then there was a daughter. And now you spend a lot of your life in Paris, and she spends a lot of hers in Los Angeles, and then you get together, and somehow that works.
Well, it works, yes. It's not that... I would suggest I've tried to suggest the producers of Murphy Brown to shoot it in Paris, but...
Murphy goes on location. FYI, comes to Paris.
Actually, when I'm not working, I'm spend a lot of time in Los Angeles, like I'm doing now. But after Damage, and they spend the summer in France. But you know, she's stuck there for a while because I was happy to read that Cheers was off the air because after 11 years.
So it means it may only be 11 years. That's
there
right.
Is hope.
Murphy will make, after 11 years, you may get her back. The a couple of quick things. One is that you had a battle with the censors on this thing. They gave you an NC-17, and you said at that point, I'll never cut this film.
And I did.
And you did. Yeah.
Shame on me.
Shame on you.
Well,
7 seconds you cut, right?
Yeah. Well, we changed the order of a scene and we did a little monkey business, but basically, fortunately, it's the same scene and they accepted the change and gave us an R. I'd not realized because that NC-17 was such a disaster.
I mean, anybody under 17 can't come to the film.
Well, it's
is that
not,
what it means?
No, it's just that they used to call it X, yeah. Which means you know, this is pornography,
right.
Which I thought was, I don't think the damage has anything to do with pornography, but they changed the name. They called it NC-17, which technically means forbidden under 17, but actually people look at it still as an X, so it doesn't work for us. And you know, especially I'm very proud of Damage, and I hated them to sort of give the stigma of yeah. You know, yeah. it was not right.
Yeah, we Americans sometimes get obsessed by sex, which you Frenchmen, I suspect, think we're a little bit prudish, don't you?
Well, no, I think it's different. For instance, what strikes me as
nudity is a better word, not sex, but nudity.
What strikes me, yes, as a foreigner. As a foreigner who lives here all the time, but
yes, I know.
Is this yes, there's a taboo on nudity, and where it seems like violence is completely acceptable. You know, I don't know. It's the National Rifle Association.
I know.
But it's really like that. It's sometimes I must say, if I was a censor, there are certain things, certain violence that I think would be
much more obscene than any nudity you'll ever see.
Exactly.
Yeah, I agree. Next project, is it underway or are you still in the process of?
No, I'm just going to take time off. I'm getting very lazy and I'm even considering retiring.
Oh, sure.
And live in Los Angeles.
Yeah. It's a long way from being a cameraman for Jacques Cousteau, isn't it?
It's a long way, but well, you know, some people think my films are a little sort of
underwater. Well, I read that somewhere. Someone said
about
that. But look at this. When you look, this is a filmography, which is a sort of like a bibliography. And look at this: from 1953 to 1992, Alamo Bay and Lacombe Lucien, Pretty Baby, Atlantic City. My Dinner with Andre Crackers. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Pleasure to have you very much.
Bye-bye.
Louis Malle, thank you for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow night. Tomorrow, a special broadcast of an hour with NBC News anchor Tom Brokaw. See you on Friday.
Tom Brokaw.
Sorry about that. The talking show took a field trip last weekend to some art galleries.
It's true.
And we ran into none other than Max from Too True. And
we did.
He seemed confused that our outro sequence always begins with the word no. So I thought I wanted to make it completely clear to Too True and their cronies that it is in fact wow.
Yeah, no fucking way, man.
Not no.
It is.
Wow.
That's how impressed we are.
No.
You got it.
I guess they end the same.
It's the same. It's a similar sound.
Oh. Yeah. Now, sorry. No. Wow.
Oh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, he was half right.
He was maybe two-thirds right.
Oh, my God. So how about that bourgeois nonsense, eh, Steve?
That's what I think. Jeez. Wow. Could you imagine a less compelling man?
Yeah.
No.
I remember seeing Murmur of the Heart
when
I was a teenager and really liking it. You know, to me, it was radical to represent in a film a mother having sex with her son.
Yeah. Boring.
But, you know, looking back now, that is just some shock therapy. I mean, the portrayal of incest was, it was like a, like it was handled the way Hollywood would do it.
Yeah.
It was, and you know, to the American viewer, incest as a theme in film could seem radical, mm-hmm. but thinking back, you know, making films in the 60s and 70s in Paris, psychoanalysis was like in the headlines practically. So, yeah, it's like making a film in America about communism as the boogeyman.
Yeah.
Jeez. Anyhow, yeah, and you know. Charlie, as always, had some very incisive questions and drew out of Mr. Maul his deep insight that you know, having a extramarital affair is complex emotionally and logistically. Right, Steve?
Jesus Christ, Nicholas. Come on. What are you talking about?
No. I didn't mean to.
Yeah. Fuck you, dude.
I didn't mean to say that you have extramarital affairs.
Thank
you. I know
you
are happily married.
Yes.
I meant it more in a speculative way, you know. Surely you can speculate as a married man that an extramarital affair would be complex both logistically and emotionally, if not morally.
Yeah, you know, I think if only just for the sort of raw logistical things, I've always avoided messing around in all my relationships. I've never done this thing before, really. In part because it just seemed like such a hassle, you know?
Yeah.
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 I can't imagine for what.
Yeah, there was that whole diatribe about his meeting with his wife, Candace Bergen, the world's most erotic lunch, history's most erotic lunch.
The five-hour lunch of legend, yeah.
Well, you know, recently Ella brought home a book that she bought from the flash sale of the CalArts president's retirement. I guess he's retiring, so uh-huh. he was shedding some books. And he had a book put out by Princeton Architectural Press written quite some time ago that was an erotic story. It was like, it's like part erotic tale and part architectural criticism.
Oh.
So there's all of this, these really heated, spicy scenes in different rooms, you know, as one does do occasionally.
Uh-huh.
Partake in randy behavior in an enclosed space. And then there are these descriptions of the architecture and then foldouts with architectural renderings, or not renderings, but really just drawings of the different rooms.
You can outrageous.
You know, get all of the architectural details of these sexual success stories.
Wow.
Rather peculiar.
Yeah.
I guess
it's like something
I met Ella in an architectural setting. I met her first in a restaurant.
Oh, those are buildings.
But more importantly, the more erotically charged meeting was at the Hammer Museum.
Jesus.
Directly after doing a performance for the talking show.
There you go. There
so
you go.
Every time I go to the Hammer, like I went to the Jimmy Durham show, that architecture is particularly charged for me because I have such fond feelings for Ella Gold. And so to have that room change drastically every time I go.
Right.
You know, I think the time when I went first, it was the Hammer Biennial, and I noticed her in a Samara Golden installation. Now there was an installation of Jimmy Durham videos. I can't think of what happened in between. Maybe I haven't been in between. That's unlikely. I've been.
You see the Francis Stark thing?
Oh, there was a photo show. Huh. Oh, and there was the Black Mountain College show.
You saw that.
Anyhow.
Yeah.
Do you remember the architecture where you met the lovely Meredith Hillbrand?
Yeah, it was a sort of a split-level hilltop house in Echo Park for dinner. And then the real sort of, then ran into her several times before at Art Things, as usual. And then a house in Highland Park. All domestic settings except for Mission Road.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, how fitting. What a fitting chunk of architecture to
meet a spouse.
Begin this beloved and holy union that you two have undertaken.
All right, Nick. Wrap it up.
Yeah. How nice. Well, on that pleasant note, I think we'll leave you, Chinatown. We will leave you in the room that you're in. And you will leave us in the room that we're in. And for those of you that are curious, we'll leave this room, go into the next room, go through the Kaechung door, go down the creepy stair, go down the creepier hallway, go down the outdoor stair, walk through the parking lot, get into my Honda Civic, maybe listen to some Japanese music from the 80s as we hurl through space-time towards Steve's apartment, chatting about life, art, the things that matter to us. But before getting to Steve's apartment, we'll decide to get a donut. We'll go down to California Donuts. Steve will get a croissant filled with sausage and cheese.
Yep.
I will get the donut that looks like a panda bear made out of white frosting and Oreos.
Gross.
It will enter the architecture of our bodies.
Sauce.
We will both feel ill in the morning.
Yeah.
And perhaps, well, not perhaps, certainly, they will leave the architecture of our bodies.
You don't know that.
But which direction they leave, up or down?
Great question.
This will be the real erotic charge of the talking show. Good morning, Chinatown.
Good night.